Today we're building a sampler rackstack riser instrument in Ableton Live 12 that carries that old-school jungle and DNB energy, but with enough modern control to work in darker rollers, halftime tension, or Euro-style intros. The big idea here is simple. Instead of leaning on one riser sample, we're going to stack multiple sampler layers inside an instrument rack, then control the whole performance with a small set of macros. That gives you a transition tool that feels musical, intentional, and reusable across the whole track. In drum and bass, risers are not just effects. They are phrase glue. They help the tune breathe between drum hits, bass phrases, breakdowns, and drop moments. In jungle especially, tension often comes from break chops, pitch climbs, reverse textures, and that classic feeling of the floor being sucked out before the impact lands. So our goal is to build something that sounds like it belongs in the record, not something pasted on top of it. Start by creating a new MIDI track and name it something like Riser Sampler Stack. Drop an instrument rack onto that track, and inside the rack, make four chains. Think of those four chains as four separate energy bands. One chain will provide motion, one will give harmonic lift, one will add dirt and grain, and one will create space and size. If two chains are doing the same job, that is usually a sign to simplify and reclaim headroom. Before we load anything, decide what kind of rise you actually need. For a quick fill, a one-bar riser might be enough. For a pre-drop build, two bars works well. But for classic jungle and old-school DNB, four bars is often the sweet spot. It gives enough time for the tension to develop without sounding overly polished or EDM-like. You can also stretch this to eight bars if you want a bigger intro or breakdown lift. Keep the MIDI clips simple at first. One sustained note is enough, or maybe a small root, fifth, and octave movement if you want it to feel more tonal. If your track is in F minor, for example, F to C to F can already suggest a strong musical center. And while we're building, keep an eye on headroom. Risers should feel dramatic, but they should not slam the master bus before the drop. Aim to keep the rack output around minus 12 to minus 8 dB while you're shaping it. Now let's build the first layer, which is our main tonal movement layer. On chain 1, load sampler and choose a source that has some old school character. That could be a chopped break fragment, a reversed cymbal tail, a short synth stab, a breathy vocal texture, or even a bit of vinyl noise with harmonic content. For jungle, break-derived source material is especially strong, because it inherits some of the rhythmic DNA of the drums. That makes the rise feel connected to the groove rather than just being another effect sweep. Inside sampler, start by setting the playback behavior to suit the sample. If you want a more vintage response, classic playback can be nice. If you want tighter control, keep it cleaner. Turn loop on if the sample has a texture you want to sustain. Set the sample start somewhere around 10-35% if you want to avoid the obvious attack, and begin deeper inside the sound. Then go to the filter section and start with a low pass cutoff somewhere around 300-900 Hz. That gives us room to open it over time later. If the source wants more climb, use the pitch envelope subtly. Keep it musical, not cartoonish. A pitch lift of plus 7 to plus 12 semitones across the phrase is usually enough to create that rising feeling. For the filter, a cutoff starting around 400 Hz with a little resonance, maybe 10 to 25%, and an envelope amount around 20 to 35% is a solid place to begin. Next, add chain 2 for tonal pressure. This layer should feel more harmonic than the first one. Load another sampler with something like a detuned synth stab, a single note from a Reese resample, a choir-like texture, or a metallic sustain. This is the layer that makes the riser feel like it is climbing musically. Pure noise can work, but tonal tension is what makes the drop feel like a release. In this layer, set the transpose to match the key center, then automate it upward across the build. If you want a classic motion, you can climb up a full octave over four bars. Keep the amp attack short enough to avoid clicks, and let the release sit around 100 to 250 milliseconds so the sound doesn't chop unnaturally. If you want more focus, try a bandpass filter to keep the energy in the mid-range. After sampler, put auto filter on this chain and shape the motion with a controlled sweep. Start the cutoff around 500 Hz and open it up to somewhere between 6 and 10 kHz. Add a bit of resonance, maybe 15 to 30%, so the sweep has some personality. If you want a nervous, living movement, you can use a tiny amount of LFO, but keep it subtle. We want tension, not wobble. Now for chain 3. Which is our grit layer. This is where things get rougher and more aggressive. Duplicate one of the earlier chains or load a fresh sample with more transient edge. Then place redux, saturator, and auto-filter after sampler. This layer gives you that hard drive spinning up feel, or that air being torn apart texture, that works so well in darker DNB and Neuro intros. For Redux, try bit reduction around 10 to 14 bits, and a bit of downsampling if you want extra grime. Keep it in a useful range so it adds texture without completely destroying the sound. On Saturator, a drive setting of about 3 to 8 dB is usually enough to thicken the upper mids. Soft clip can help keep the peak safer. Then use auto filter with a high pass around 120 to 250 Hz so we keep the low end clean. This layer should be felt more than heard as a separate element. If it starts fighting the drums, back it off. Chain 4 is our tail and space layer. This one should not add bass. Its job is to create a halo around the riser and make the transition feel larger. Use a short percussive sample or a reverse texture, then process it with reverb, utility, and maybe chorus ensemble if you want some extra width. Set the reverb decay somewhere between 1.8 and 4.5 seconds, with a short predelay around 10 to 30 milliseconds. Keep the size moderate rather than massive, because we don't want the whole drop area turning into fog. Then place utility after the reverb, so you can control width and keep the low mids disciplined. In DNB, this matters a lot, because if the reverb tail is too wide or too long, it can blur the kick and snare right before the drop. We want atmosphere, but we also want punch. Now that the four chains are set up, it's time to map the macros creatively. The key here is to make each macro control a musical behavior, not just a random collection of device parameters. That way, the rack feels playable, not just technical. Use macro 1 for rise time. This can be linked to sample start, amp envelope behavior, and release time across the chains so the rise feels longer or shorter depending on the song section. Macro 2 can be pitch lift, controlling the transpose on the tonal layers, perhaps from 0 up to plus 12 semitones, or even plus 19 if you want a more dramatic modern climb. Macro 3 should be filter open, mapping to the filter cutoff across the layers, roughly from 300 Hz up to 14 kHz. Macro 4 is grind, tied to saturator drive and redux amount, but keep the range tasteful. You want dirt, not total collapse. Macro 5 can be width, and this should mainly affect the top layer or the ambience layer. Do not widen everything, especially not anything containing low mids. Macro 6 is throw, controlling the reverb wet amount and maybe some decay behavior, but keep the overall space under control. Macro 7 is tension start, and this is a great creative macro because it lets you move the starting position of the sample and the initial filter point. That means the same rock can start in different places and feel like a new riser every time. Macro 8 is impact snap, and this should tighten and brighten the final moment, maybe by opening the filter a touch more, adding a small volume lift, or shortening the release so the end feels more defined. One really useful coach tip here: use uneven macro ranges on purpose. A great rack often feels subtle for the first 70% of a knob turn, then much more dramatic in the final 30%. That gives you playable control and keeps the riser from feeling flat or mechanical. And it also means you can perform the rack in a more musical way if you're automating it in the arrangement. Now draw a 4-bar MIDI clip and automate the macros with intention. In bars 1 and 2, keep it gradual. Let filter open move slowly from around 20% up to 55%. Let pitch lift rise from 0 to around plus 5 semitones. Keep grind low and tasteful. In bar 3, start accelerating the motion. Push pitch lift harder, maybe to plus 8 or plus 12 semitones. Increase throw a little so the space blooms. Let width open on the top layer. Then in bar 4, go to peak tension. Open the filter almost fully. Raise grind a bit, and use impact snap to add that final brightness and forward motion. For old-school jungle energy, you can make the last bar feel a little more rhythmic instead of a perfectly smooth ramp. A subtle pulse or uneven rise can make the transition feel more like breakbeat phrasing, and less like a generic synth sweep. That kind of irregular motion is often what gives the riser its personality. A good arrangement trick is to start the riser under the last two snare hits, then let it fully open in the final two bars, before the drop. That way it supports the drum phrase instead of overpowering it. The riser should make the drop feel earned, not just announced. Once the rack is working, resample it to auto. This is a huge step in advanced drum and bass workflows. It lets you commit to the shape, place the transition precisely, and process it as an arrangement element instead of leaving it as an endlessly tweakable instrument. After resampling, trim the clip so it lands exactly on the drop. Add a fade if needed, but keep the end crisp. Then check the waveform against the drum fill, and make sure the final transient is not fighting the kick or snare. Always test the riser in context. Put it against a rolling breakbeat, a sub-heavy bass line, maybe a Reese or Neuro layer, and a lead and snare fill. That is where you'll really hear whether the riser is doing its job. A good riser should make the drums hit harder, not softer. If it is too wide, too bright, or too dense in the mids, it will flatten the impact of the drop. The goal is to create tension while preserving space for the main groove. A few common mistakes to watch out for. First, don't make the riser too broadband. Keep the low end cleaned out, usually below 120 to 250 Hz, and avoid spreading the low mids. Second, don't use the same generic sweep for every transition. Vary the sample start, pitch curve, and dirt amount so each riser has a slightly different emotional job. Third, don't overwiden the entire rack. Only widen the upper layer. Fourth, don't let the reverb wash into the drop. Shorten the decay or cut it before the downbeat if needed. And finally, don't ignore the key center. Tuning the tonal layer to the track key or to the fifth makes the lift feel much more musical.